This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on September 29, 2016. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
We'll now skip back to item 7 on our agenda, which is a proposal to attack scam PACs. There was a memo submitted by Commissioner Weintraub, set forth in agenda document number 16-48-A. I'll turn it over to Commissioner Weintraub.
And I just want to clarify that it was submitted by Commissioner Weintraub and Commissioner Rep.
Oh, I apologize. So,
quite all right.
I want to make
Thank
sure
you.
That credit is given where it's due.
This is a subject that I've been increasingly riled up about. It just really makes me mad. We're seeing this in increasing numbers, these PACs that are out there that solicit people's money, and they use candidates' name, and they suggest they're going to be spending the money on behalf of the candidate, and somehow or other the money never gets to the candidate, it never gets out into advertising, but a lot of money ends up in the pockets of vendors who often are associated closely and sometimes are the same people as the folks who organized the PAC in the first place. And, you know, we see this in the charity context also, but we don't have jurisdiction over that. And I guess it's not surprising that we're starting to see it in increasing numbers also in the political arena. And it mostly targets people who are small donors, who aren't going to have the resources or the time to spend a lot of effort trying to figure out, you know, what this particular PAC is doing or who they're supporting. They know who they purport to be supporting, but they may not have the means or the time to figure out whether these are really legitimate operations or not. You know, the big donors have advisors, and they have, you know, they can pretty much take care of themselves. There was an interesting article about the actor Daniel Craig getting taken in by one of these scam packs, but that's, I think, not the normal victim. The normal victim is somebody who is, you know, sitting at home and gets something either in the mail or online and seems to be supporting a cause that they care about, and they say, you know, I'm going to give my $25. And they're trying to exercise their First Amendment rights, and they're being thwarted. And the candidate that they are hoping to support is also being thwarted, and that money is being diverted. And we sometimes have gotten complaints from candidates saying, hey, there's somebody out there using my name to raise money, and I'm not getting any of it. There ought to be a law against that. And I agree, there ought to be a law against that. And I've been thinking a lot about this and whether there is really something that we can do about it, because I think we've all expressed some frustration with this when it comes up in the enforcement context, and we've acknowledged that the laws are not what we would hope they would be to protect against this. And we have, from time to time, made legislative recommendations to Congress, and I hope that when we consider our package this year, we will also consider doing that this year. I think we need to go beyond just urging that the literal anti-fraud provisions of the Act be expanded to cover this, but we also have to look at expanding personal use and anti-self-dealing provisions, because that's where the incentive is for people to do this. I mean, they're just ripping people off, and it makes me mad, and I want to do something about it. And I think that one thing that we can do is try to require, in addition to asking Congress for help, I think there are things that we could do here to improve the way we format our information so that it's easier for people to go to our website and figure out, for example, how much of a PAC's spending is going for overhead and how much is actually going for activities to promote a candidate. I think it's become easier to confuse people in the era of super PACs because there are so many different groups out there that all claim to be acting on behalf of different candidates. And we just had a loss in the Pursuing America's Greatness case where the court said reverse the refusal to grant a preliminary injunction, but the issue was whether using the name of the candidate and the name of the PAC could be limited. And the court said no and said that we could do other things. The court said, here the FEC reasonably fears that voters might mistakenly believe an unauthorized committee's activities are actually approved by a candidate if the committee uses the candidate's name in its title. But there is a substantial likelihood that the particular regulation is not the least restrictive means to achieve the government's interest. For example, the FEC could require a large disclaimer at the top of the websites and social media pages of unauthorized committees that declares, this website is not Candidate Doe's official website. The Supreme Court regularly views such disclosure requirements as less restrictive alternatives to flat bans on speech. But the FEC rejected proposals to have stronger or larger disclaimers in place of the overall ban. Well, you know, some of us were not happy with that decision, and we thought that we should appeal it to the en banc court, and some of us weren't willing to do that. So I think since we're stuck with this decision, at least we ought to listen to what the court said and try and do something to improve our disclaimers, improve our disclosure. We could have special landing pages. We could look at the size of the fonts. We could look at plain English requirements, because right now the way the disclaimers are written, they make a lot of sense to campaign finance lawyers when they talk about authorized committees and unauthorized committees or authorized communications and unauthorized communications. But I'm not sure that, you know, somebody sitting in their home looking at their computer for 15 minutes in the evening and seeing a solicitation online and seeing that disclaimer is really going to understand necessarily what that means and what the relationships are and are not between the PACs and the candidates whose names they're fundraising off of. So I think we could do more, and I've put a bunch of suggestions in here, but I'm certainly open to hearing what else we could do. I think that if we had more information about, you know, overhead versus spending on candidate advocacy, it would give people the kind of information that they get from websites like Charity Navigator. You know, I'm not proposing that we would actually rate campaigns. I think that would not be our job. We shouldn't be doing that. But we could provide the raw data, which we're already collecting. I mean, this wouldn't require statutory change because we already have this information. It's just a question of whether we could present it in a way that would be more helpful to people. And I think, you know, we could open up a rulemaking and talk about that and get suggestions from people and maybe do some real good here to try and help people avoid getting ripped off, because that's really what it is. And it's, as I said, people are trying to exercise their First Amendment rights to give money to the candidates of their choice, or in some cases to give money to oppose the candidates that they don't choose. But their First Amendment rights are, in some sense, being taken advantage of and denied them by these fraudsters. And I think we should do everything that we can to try and stop that from happening. So I propose that we start a rulemaking to deal with this. I hope that we will. I think we should also consider how we could reformat some of our disclosures as we move forward in our newly updated and user-friendly website that we have at beta.fec.gov. Everybody go look there and give us suggestions on how to make it better. And I hope that at the appropriate time we could also consider legislative recommendations on this important topic.
Thank you. Commissioner Rob.
Yeah, let me just add a couple things, and I echo what my colleague has just said. Ever since we had the Alan West case, where we were all very frustrated because of the solicitation that appeared to not have a sufficient disclaimer, although it had one, but to indicate that the money was actually not going to the candidate, but going to a separate PAC. I think I have been very, very concerned about this problem and concerned about the fact that we don't have adequate mechanisms to inform the public. And I know there's some difference of opinion on the commission about what our role is with regard to the voters and informing the voters, and which is why I'm so pleased about Commissioner Hunter's proposal to give information to the public about all of these issues in voting and what our rules are. But we do have obligations to protect the public. That's part of the reason why there are regulations and laws relating to improper personal use of campaign funds, and that's under our purview. We look at that issue all the time, and the whole reason is that people who are giving campaign funds are entitled to make certain that their funds are being used for the stated purposes. That's why they're giving them. And a lot of these people who are being defrauded in these matters are elderly, don't have sufficient information, and are truly being taken to the cleaners by some of these scam PACs that have now arisen in much greater numbers during this campaign season than ever before. So it seems to me that the recommendations for providing greater information on our website, greater disclosure, would be an incredible service on behalf of the public that we should all be supporting. You know, with regard to the recommendations, legislative recommendations, I also support us asking Congress to look at this issue and give more authority to the FEC, no question, and we'll come to that. I don't disagree that this is a nuanced question, though. I mean, it really is. It's not particularly not so much the Allen West situation, but the situations where there's a determination about how much overhead is appropriate and that sort of thing. I mean, I don't think there's any question that it's complicated, but it seems to me that this is something that is important for us to embark on and to ask Congress to look at. Thank you.
Do we have any other questions or discussion? Commissioner Goodman?
I believe our new website is taking a stab at this, but it's doing it very brokenly and not in a very tailored way because we don't have all the mechanisms to sort out, given our purpose requirements, what things are for. So, for example, in the nonprofit world, if an organization sends out a solicitation letter, for decades, lawyers have advised, because on their 990s, they have to distinguish fundraising costs from mission costs. And so what most nonprofits do, if they send out a solicitation letter, and it's 10 pages long, and the solicitation with an insert return envelope is about 10% of the material, they regularly, and this is countenanced by the IRS, they count 90% of that direct mail piece at the total cost, printing, postage, to its mission, if it's educational, for example, and then they'll count 10% to fundraising for purposes of filling out their 990. I don't know that that's the rule we have to use. I'm just saying we don't require that type of sub-reporting the way the IRS does for charitable organizations. But I dare say that many of these organizations that people question will point to many emails that they send with a lot of advocacy in them, and then the ask for money is a link at the bottom. And so just to not to oppose your ideas, you have some good ideas, just to, I guess, say that right now our website is trying to show administrative costs for committees. And it's breaking things into categories as they're reported for our purposes without any ability to look at the sub-purposes underneath a direct mail piece, for example. So it's actually quite complicated, and I understand you understand that, and Commissioner Ravel just acknowledged that. So I guess this is not by way of throwing up my arms. I'm just saying the disclosure mechanisms we have in place are baroque, and obviously to
baroque or broke
baroque.
<Okay.
laughs> No, yeah. No, you did a very good job, and the new website's pretty good. So it's trying to do more than we've historically done with these new graphs and percentage breakdowns and what have you, but it's nowhere near actually calculating the actual communicative elements of a direct mail piece, for example, versus the solicitation. And so, anyway, I think you raised some good ideas. They aren't lost on us, particularly after the Court of Appeals mentioned disclaimers could be perhaps enhanced. I think there may be some promise there. But anyway, not to understate the complexity of some of the disclosure remedies that you propose.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Commissioner Goodman. I never think that we should not launch an enterprise because we don't exactly know what the answer is going to be at the end. I think one thing that we could do as part of this effort is to reach out to people like the folks at Open Secret and at the Campaign Finance Institute, the people who regularly sort of dig into our data and look for more effective ways of displaying it. I know there have been suggestions in the past that maybe we ought to have standardized categories that people have to use when they are disclosing their disbursements, you know, so that it would be easier to try and figure it out. I completely get your point, and yes, of course, when people send out these solicitations, there is usually a lot of persuasive information in there. I don't think it would be a very effective solicitation if they didn't give people a reason to give their money. But I think we could, you know, I don't think we've ever looked at this in a focused way, how we could improve our disclosure towards this end. And it's an excellent time to be doing it as we are updating our website. One thing that struck me is I was looking at one particular website, and I can't remember what it was. I think it came up in the course of perhaps one of our enforcement matters. And yes, they had a perfectly fine disclaimer under all of our regulations at the bottom, but you would have to scroll way down to find it. It doesn't pop up when you first click on the page, and you know, as opposed to say the donate button, which does. So it would be easily overlooked. So I think that's the sort of thing we could look at. Maybe we should tell people they have to put the disclaimer at the top and not at the bottom. Maybe the font size needs to be improved, made larger. You know, I think there's a lot of perhaps even small fixes that might be helpful and that we could explore. I just want to point out that 2015 Politico study of FEC reports from the 2014 cycle found that a subset of 33 PACs, quote, spent only $3 million on ads and contributions to boost the long-shot candidates often touted in the appeals, compared to $39.5 million on operating expenses, including $6 million to firms owned or managed by the operatives who run the PACs. So, you know, we're talking about millions of dollars here. It's, you know, I suppose one could say, oh, but it's a multi-billion dollar election cycle. What's a few million dollars here and there? But it is a significant amount of money, and it hits the people who can least afford to be hit, and probably takes money away from some of these, you know, long shot candidates who are, you know, just trying to help us have a more vibrant democracy by you know, posing perhaps alternative views. So I'm encouraged by your comments. You know, yes, it might be hard, and we might not be able to do everything. But I think that if we started the process, we could probably get our lawyers drafting some very useful documents that would pose a lot of good questions. We could hold a hearing and invite people in to help us sort through some of these issues. We don't need a rulemaking in order to improve our disclosure, but I think it would be beneficial to try and at least seek some public guidance on that, seek some help from people who are basically in the same disclosure business, doing it different ways. And I think, you know, maybe this is something where we could actually do some good.
I'll just add my two cents. I thought, as I read through this, I thought this was a very constructive proposal. And as has been expressed, I think that there has been frustration about some of the MERS that we've encountered. At at maybe the limited tools that we have. And as both Commissioner Ravel and Commissioner Weintraub point out, we do have limits on what we have within at our disposal, that there are many of the most difficult questions about how to some of the issues that you talk about, self-dealing, overhead percentage, those are very difficult questions and really would have to be worked out by Congress, which would be interesting. We as she pointed out, we currently have a provision in the law that we enforce talking about that it's illegal to fraudulently misrepresent oneself as speaking on behalf of a candidate or on behalf of a party and then making a solicitation. And we can enforce that. The trickier question is, well, what about someone who doesn't represent that they are acting on behalf of a candidate or a party, but they are representing that I'm supporting a particular candidate, and then little to none of the money that they then contribute, that they then spend, actually goes towards direct advocacy. How you draw those lines are really tricky lines, and I think that those would have to be drawn by Congress. But I think that you also raise questions that whether our disclaimer requirements, which we do have control over and do have authority to amend or modify consistent with the statute, are those adequate to protect against efforts to mislead? And it's not only just efforts to mislead, and you were just even talking about sometimes there can be unintentional confusion where just the presentation might lead one to think that they're speaking on behalf of a candidate when they're not, and there's nothing intentional about it. But if, for example, the naming conventions in our rules are no longer going to be valid and candidate names are going to be maybe part of an unauthorized committee's name, then that creates the potential for unintentional confusion to go along with those who might be deliberately trying to mislead. And that does raise questions about what can we do with respect to disclaimers. And the court did point out some things that would be permissible, less restrictive means for getting at the same issue. And I definitely want to pursue, to think about those as well. And with respect to the website, I view that as an effort to make a more informed consumer, just so that I think that would be helpful in instances where there is intent to mislead and to deceive, but also just for those who may get confused by all the committees that may be soliciting them, and in order to better sort out how they want to allocate dollars that they're going to contribute. So, I think this is a constructive proposal. I appreciate that you are interested to work with colleagues on this, and I'm not prepared to vote on it today, but this came in earlier this week, and we hadn't really delved into this the way we have maybe on some of the other issues. And so I'd like to think about some maybe ideas or any other responses I might have that we might be able to use to come up with a constructive, a proposal that we could all agree on. But like I said, I think this is a good first step in that process. And I think that while there's things that are out of our control, there are things that are within our control that we can do to help maybe solve this problem would be too strong of a word, but there are things that we can do to mitigate some of the harms that are being committed. Commissioner Weintraub.
Can I make a suggestion? Because I don't want to lose this, sort of positive vibe that I'm getting at the table here. If you're not prepared to vote on, officially launching a rulemaking at this point, could we agree to put together a working group of our staff, and it could include our EAs, if you want, but I think we should particularly reach out to our policy division and to some of our IT folks and try and put together perhaps a more developed set of proposals. Can we agree to at least take that step forward?
Yeah, I've got no problem with that. And I think that would be it would be useful to figure out just to get a preliminary look to get a full extent of what is within our legal authority to do, and also to get a clearer idea of what technological solutions or aids to this problem that we might be able to marshal as well. So I think having a working group would be a very good idea.
I'm going to count that as a victory, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are there any other discussions or? Okay, then we will. And we will take that, and we can discuss further about how we want to compose those and when we would like to meet and further that process.
Thank you. And I want to thank all of my colleagues for being so open and receptive to this idea.
Thank you.